Hey everyone, and welcome back to the First Act Podcast. This is part two of establishing your LinkedIn network with John Kraske. Listen in as we break down the tips and tricks to growing your authentic social following, driving real engagement, and creating value on LinkedIn in Web3. This is an episode you won't want to miss.
And now, hosted by Harry G, this is your one-stop shop for hot talk straight from the top. Whether you're trying to build a job in pop, rock, or any other artsy schlock, here's your top dog with info that can't be bought, it's gotta be sought. So sit back, crack a six-pack, because we're about to chit-chat and rip facts. It's the First Act Podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I do that a lot. It just depends, you know? Like, I've had posts where literally I have 200 comments. I do not have time to, like, do 200 thoughtful posts, but I still want to reply. So I usually try to reply to everybody first 24 hours. After that, it's really impossible if you're posting every day. But yeah, I get it. But yes, I do take that. There are days where I really try to be thoughtful, so I do try to balance it out. But that is super important to come up with something thoughtful. But we also are human too, and we only have so much time. So it just, if you're active all the time, then I get what you're saying for sure. But yeah, your post was great. But that also, you know what? Also, though, it comes down to the post itself. If you actually have a really great post, you're just like, wow, this is, like, I want to, like, have an insightful comment. Because some posts, you're just like, I'm just going to support this person and say, a lot of times I'm just like, I love this person, but this post is doing nothing for me. So I'm just going to say, love it and move on. Happy Thursday or whatever. And I'm in and out of that post in 2 seconds. So it depends. Totally right. Depends. But I totally agree with your point. It's like people that, like yourself, I would actually come up with something thoughtful because that was a great post. And it's actually something I'm passionate about too, really helping musicians probably monetize their creative work, because I feel like that's an area that NFTs and Web3 can really impact in a positive way.
So I want to shift gears for a moment. You know, you sure. Mentioned at the start of the call that when it comes to Web3, the point of entry now is more metaverse focused. Can you elaborate on
that? Well, I mean, that's my job. So yeah, of course. That's. I think it's more tangible to actually talk to a brand and be like, hey, we're going to actually build you something in the virtual world that replicates the physical world, right? A little easier to understand than NFTs, which are still seems a little more abstract, right? So I think that's the appeal for me selling the metaverse as opposed to NFTs. Because when I was selling NFTs, the whole thing, like funny, the whole thing was we were basically saying, yeah, start with NFTs, and that'll get you into the metaverse, right? So it was like, we'll just get you to the metaverse now, and then we can deal with the NFTs on the back end. So that's kind of what excites me about it. And, you know, I mean, it's definitely, boy, the metaverse, I mean, there's so much to be still done there, but it's, you know, it comes down to like, I work for a really great team too. That, I mean, that's one of the most important things for me right now in the space is aligning myself with really quality, smart people. So I'm working with Charles Atkins, who's our global VP, and I worked with him at NFT Genius, and I started NFT Thought Leaders, now Good Morning Web3 Live with him. So I like to stay really close. I feel like he's one of the sharpest minds in the space. And then our CEO, Sam Huber, who again, super, super smart, sharp thought leader in the space. He previously had a in-video game advertising company called AdMix, which then merged with LandVault. So company's been around for 5 years. They have an amazing tech stack that we're going to basically take and pivot to Web3. So we're building out an actual product, not on top of like the building that we're going to be doing in the metaverse. So we built the most square feet of any builder in the world and all the metaverse combined. We have over 120 builders. So there's just a lot to be excited about. You know what excites me most about the metaverse and where I'm at right now is we're going to be able to execute for these brands, because we've already been dealing with them for 5 years with our predecessor company. And it's always nice to be able to talk a big game and actually deliver on the back end. So we just recently did something for MasterCard. We're going to be doing something for Walmart here.
Can you talk about what you do for these companies, like, and how you marry metaverse with their brand?
Yeah, I mean, we were previously an in-video game advertising company. So we have a creative team, and we'll actually come up with a few different creative ideas. Then we'll iterate that idea with their team. And then once we decide on what activation we want to do, then we'll go out and build it. So I mean, we have a whole in-house and creative team that can work directly with these brands and advertising agencies to execute whatever it is they want to accomplish in terms of their, you know, either marketing goals, revenue goals, whatever that is. Mostly it's most of this stuff's marketing driven right now. So it's not,
right. Sorry to interject. I was just going to say, I can't imagine that they necessarily know the extent of what the metaverse can do. They probably come to you guys more as consultants to then actually execute on what they want. You probably ideate together. Is that right?
Correct. Yep. Very collaborative process.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's sort of like, I feel like that echoes through the Web3 space as a whole, right? Because I think that this whole space is exceptionally collaborative right now. Do you think that it'll end up at a certain point being a little bit more gated?
Yeah, probably like everything, right? I mean, I don't know when that is. I don't know if it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but I think most of the stuff's going to be centralized as it was in Web 2, but maybe it'll feel a little more decentralized. So, I mean, I love the dream of everything being decentralized and all of us being, you know, all everybody being able to fully monetize their work in the proper way. But, you know, money controls everything still, and these big brands are going to protect their turf. So, right. You know, they're the ones, and the reality is right now in a bear market, they're the ones that have the money to invest in these companies. So they're going to be the ones kind of driving these future projects and companies that are being built.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of naysayers out there that don't think that metaverse is going to be a thing. They don't think that Web3 or crypto is going to last. What is your perspective on that?
It's definitely going to last. I just don't know what shape it's going to take, though. That's still to be determined. I think the way it exists now, that's not what it's going to ultimately be for big brand mass consumer adoption. So I feel like companies like Flow and what they've done, I feel like that's going to be more in line with what it's going to look and feel like. So, you know, you can go on the Flow and literally just swipe your credit card basically and buy an NFT in 2 seconds, right? So, and it's, they're more of a centralized blockchain. So it's, I think it's...
What does Flow do? Is Flow just a transaction process?
But Flow's like the blockchain that Dapper Labs, NBA Top Shots on. So it's one of your companies in your backyard, Vancouver based. So
Canadian. Yeah, Dapper is Vancouver based.
Yeah, I think Flow's their blockchain. So so that's, I'm a big fan. They were investors in my predecessor company, or my previous company, NFT Genius, the Mark Cuban, Ashton Kutcher company. So I work closely with them. Great team. They're doing a lot of really interesting stuff. I know that, I think they have some big news coming at the end of the year with a big entertainment studio. I'm not even sure exactly what the nature of that is going to be, but I mean, just think of the biggest content creator in the world, and that'll lead you to what Dapper Labs is working on. So they're going to be doing something super interesting. And yeah, I think, you know, I just recently met with Fox Blockchain Creative Labs. They're another big studio looking to do some really interesting stuff in space. So it's always fun to have those kind of conversations and figure out kind of what these big brands are thinking in terms of entering the space. But I think what the feedback I get from a lot of these brands that are already in it, they're really struggling to figure out how to get just everyday consumers in the space. That's what there's just still too much friction. It's, you know, they don't understand how to get like the everyday, you know, person in the space. What do you have to do? Well, I mean, you have to basically make it feel like they're just doing any other thing they do on their phone with an app, you know, whether it's buying a burrito or going on Amazon and buying toilet paper. It's kind of, you need to basically replicate that. So that's the job of the builders in these companies. You have to get rid of all the weird terminology, the NFT and Web3, all the crypto, all that stuff, to be honest with you, and just literally be like, it's just an app on my phone, and I just like hit a couple buttons. I mean, that's where we need to go. So yeah, I think all these technical terms just create too much confusion, too much friction, too much just fear. So it's the people that are just gonna make it super clean. And I'm starting to see some products like that being built. I think that's where the space is heading. At least the smart builders in space are heading, at least.
Couldn't agree more. I've been thinking about how I want to, you know, I know that we spoke offline about one of the projects that I've been exploring in the music and Web3 space. Mm-hmm. And I think that the approach that we're probably going to be taking is not even using the term NFT, yep. even if we use some sort of blockchain technology that is similar to an NFT.
Yep.
Because I think that a lot of people in entertainment have already been burned in some capacity, but by an NFT, and they're off put by it. And people that when they hear NFT, they're like, oh, you know what? Like, there's like, it's like the scam alert goes off in their brain. They're like, oh no, it's a scam. I don't want to be part of it. And so, whereas other people are the complete opposite. Yep. But I think the vast majority of people right now are still, and you know, like, oh, I don't understand it. It's confusing. I hear people throwing money into that, and then crypto went to the shitter, and they lost all their money, right? You hear all these things like Luna and what was the other one, Celsius, where a lot of other people lost some of their life savings. And yep. I think that if you, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. It's like, if you can avoid using some of this terminology and make it more commonplace and more familiar to what people already know, that's yep. how you're going to have a win. And yep. that is what's going to give you your, you know, that's going to be the answer to the $10 billion question.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I believe I did not buy NBA Top Shots when it first came out, but I believe when that first came out, they didn't even have the name NFT on their site. I think it just said like own a history or own a moment in history in sports or something like that. I forget the exact terminology, but from what I've been told, it didn't have an NFT, just super simple process, and that helped onboard a lot of just regular everyday people into the space. So smart play by them. But I think now they have NFT on their website. I'm not really sure why, but they probably need to scrub that if they do. So
yeah. John Kraske said it here today. NBA Top Shop, you gotta clean up that NFT.
Yeah, yeah. I doubt they're gonna take any of my advice. They seem to be doing just fine without me. So
I wanna actually talk a little bit about your path. So you told us a little bit about it, about how you started off as a CPA, you worked in accounting, then you decided to do your MBA in entertainment. Do you recommend doing an MBA? Like, is grad school important and necessary to get to where you are today?
It's so funny. I'm literally going to write a post basically saying my MBA was not worth it, the $150,000 I spent on it. So funny you asked that question. So I do not believe the MBA is for everybody, because I was not very focused on exactly what I wanted to get out of it. I kind of knew what I wanted, but that was not a good play, because it's just a super expensive investment. It's 2 years of your life. So unless you're really, really, the people that I saw had massive success in my MBA program, I mean, they literally were like, okay, I got an idea for a business, I'm going to incubate it here, or I want to be an investment banker and this is the path. I was just like, oh, I want to do the business side of entertainment, but I wasn't really sure. And it was just a little loosey-goosey and lackadaisical. So I didn't execute as much as I should. So I guess my advice is, if you really or really know what you want to accomplish out of it, then invest and go to a top tier program. But if you don't, then, I mean, you can still go get it, but don't spend the money on like a top tier program like I did. $150,000, way too much money. You know, go maybe to like a lower tier program, maybe spend, you know, $10,000-$20,000, maybe then it's a decent investment. But I think you really need to know what you're going to get out of that MBA to really fully monetize it. It's definitely not a waste for everybody, because I saw some people that just crushed it. But those people too, I look back and like, they literally knew day one what they wanted out of it. So, I mean, right. There was a guy that he ended up like leaving the program after like 6 months, but he went to Wharton, and then he left that too. I don't even got his MBA, but he started AdMob, which was then sold to Google for like $700 million, and then became a partner at Sequoia. And now I think he's working another VC, but he crushed it. There was another guy who started a video streaming company. He knew, I remember basically from day one, he knew exactly what he was trying to do, because I was taking entrepreneurship classes. He just sold his company for, I don't even know, like $100 million or something. So just a couple of examples of people that knew day one what they wanted and crushed it. So
how did the MBA enable them then? Because it sounds like they were in the MBA program. They wanted to really do something else that was outside of school, and then they ended up actually leaving to pursue what they actually wanted to do. And then they made a fortune, and it kicked off their career.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there you have access to professors, you have access to alumni and investors and whatnot. So there's a lot of resources that inside the MBA program that'll open doors. And I think you just even saying, you know, you have access to those alumni networks, which really helps. So I actually think as a student, a grad student, it's easier to get in front of a lot of high profile people. They'll be a little more just welcoming and forthcoming. But yeah, no, there's a lot of resources inside the program that'll benefit you while you're in there. It becomes more difficult to access them once you leave, though. So then you're just randomly reaching out to people as an alumni, and then you know, you're one of hundreds of thousands of people, or not, if not millions, depending on the school. So yeah, in hindsight, I would have done things different. I mean, I still would maybe get the MBA, but boy, I'd want to be really hyper-focused on what I wanted. So I think grad school is probably the right call for me, but I'm not sure if the MBA was the right degree for me. I think maybe I should have looked at like film school or something else a little more like creative. Yeah. You know, the one thing I will say, the first year of my MBA, I was taking the same classes I took because I was a business undergrad. I just felt like it was a waste of money. I was like taking statistics, econ, finance, and it was really hard to get motivated. I was like, man, I already studied for all this stuff and I hated it the first time. I'm not like, it was really difficult. Second year, I enjoyed a lot. There was like a lot of business and entertainment classes taught by high profile professionals in entertainment. That was fun. And I crushed it in terms of my grades because I was really interested in it. But again, I mean, I just did the first year of classes, did nothing for me. I mean, I met some cool friends and stuff, but I mean, net, man, that was probably not a good investment. But hey, check out I'm going to have a LinkedIn post about this. So I would actually say the most growth I've had in my career is been on LinkedIn, actually, just really understanding how to leverage that and monetize it. I follow a lot of really great content creators. I've learned a ton from them, and I use most, I'd actually say the skills I use most every day are from people I've fallen on LinkedIn. I've actually followed them. I've actually, some of them have some courses I've taken, and I'm just learning a ton, actually. It's pretty invaluable if you find the right people to follow, and there's something there for everybody on LinkedIn. So don't discount it for sure, man. I would always give LinkedIn your first shot in terms of trying to figure out your career before just dumping a bunch of money into an MBA.
I love how you're saying all this. And like, as I'm kind of scrolling through your LinkedIn profile, I see like a lot of your background. You were like a senior consultant, you were a CFO, you've worked in business development, you were a chief operating officer. You've had all these incredible roles. And the one thing that keeps holding true in all the advice that you're sharing is put yourself out there on LinkedIn and yep. mingle with people. And this is all free. It's completely all free on how you can connect with people. And, you know, yeah, there is something to that can be said about going to grad school. And like you said, being part of like an alumni network, or even as a grad student, reaching out to the alumni network, because it's almost like disarming, right? It's like, hey, you know, I'm taking this class and this professor recommended I reach out to you. Or, hey, you know, I'm in this program, but I also noticed that you're part of the alumni network from, you know, USC or UCLA or, you know, Harvard or, you know, whatever yep. school you might've gone to, right?
Yep.
But the main thing here is that it's disarming, but it's also like, like you said, like people are probably willing to give you 10 or 15 minutes of their time. And at the end of every single call, you know, regardless of what you learn, whether it was a great call or not such a great call, the main question that at least I always try to tell everyone to ask is there anybody else that you think that I should speak with?
Yep.
And look how that worked out with us, right? Like we yep. hopped on the phone purely from LinkedIn. And right after that, we swapped phone numbers. You introduced me to three people in your network. I introduced you to a couple in mine. Yep. And it just grows from there. And yeah. you lead with value and you'll end up getting value in return.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I've actually, yeah, you start to like find these clusters of like people, great people, and then you start meeting more of those people that know that person, and then it's wild. So I've really gotten like, it's kind of funny. Like Facebook Meta was one of those companies I always want to work at, and they just would never hire somebody like me. I just didn't have the right background. And then as I became more prominent on LinkedIn, I had to start having all these Meta executives that were looking to pivot into Web3 reach out to me. I'm like, you're asking me for advice how to pivot into Web3? It's completely insane.
Right.
And I'm not even kidding. I'm like really close, like four or five of these Meta executives now that Some are still at the company. A lot of them have left and kind of done their own thing, but it's amazing. It's like, and they're some of my best friends now in the space. So it's really cool. All LinkedIn again, all LinkedIn, man. All I'll say is what you get out of LinkedIn, what you put into it. So, but you can probably say that about a lot of things in life.
Yeah. It's just that if, in terms of your career, I think that, you know, I know we're really shilling LinkedIn here. Like if there was some sort of a LinkedIn coin, I feel like we'd be some of the whales in the space.
You need to get them as a sponsor for this podcast.
I should.
Yeah. Yeah. We both should actually. So for both our podcasts, maybe I'll work on that. It's such a great, powerful tool though. But I mean, honestly, what's better advertising than people like ourselves who say how much it impacted our lives?
So how do you recommend someone who's just starting out use LinkedIn? Like if someone's listening to this podcast right now who doesn't even have a LinkedIn profile, is it too late for them?
No, it's never too late. No. I mean, look, I told you I went from 10,000 to 35,000 followers in a year just by posting every day and just kind of being committed to the process. And everybody's growth trajectory is different. There's a guy, Pete Huang, and he works at Coinbase. Obviously, that helps. Obviously, working there for sure. But I mean, he like had 5,000 followers and now he's like at 30, and that happened like literally in a few months. So everybody's on a different trajectory, but you can definitely do it. I think people follow people like myself, you know, like Charles, I mean, you just start engaging, kind of seeing the content we're posting. I mean, there's some other people I follow, and you know, there's some great content creators out there that, you know, like find people with really good followings and kind of see how they write and engage with them and come up with, like, again, to your point of thoughtful comments, and it kind of snowballs. But I mean, you know, everybody that's successful on the platform probably follows other people and they've kind of emulated what they've done in their own style. So I think that's kind of step one. There's a couple content creators out there that I really, you know, like to follow. So, you know, whether to reach out to me. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple that are really great. So that, I really love and have influenced my writing style and influenced kind of how I've, done it. And they're not expensive either. So you don't need to invest. Maybe you need to invest maybe a couple hundred dollars in a couple of these people that have courses on how to kind of take control of your LinkedIn profile, how to create content. But it's anybody that's trying to say, hey, like, I'm going to charge you $5,000 or $10,000 for your LinkedIn, don't do it. You can probably do it with spending no money, but if you really want to level it up, I would suggest maybe following a couple people that, whatever, if you reach out to me, I can tell you more about it. But yeah, that's it, man. I think it's not that complicated. So I guess first step is follow me and you, right? No, that's good first step, right?
Thanks for tuning in to part two. Stay tuned for part three. Remember, new episodes release every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific. See you there.